Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Gordon Solie with Championship Wrestling from Florida, and let me welcome you to another hour of some very, very exciting matches.
When legendary promoter Cowboy Luttrell handed over the announcing reins of his fledgling wrestling program to Gordon Solie in the early 1960s, his hope was to attract more viewers and promote the weekly matches around the state of Florida.
I want to take a moment right now to talk about Wrestling Tuesday night at the Armory in Tampa, and quite an outstanding night of wrestling, too.
However, nobody could have predicted that Solie would become the unparalleled voice of wrestling for a generation.
You mean you feel excited, and he could call a match like nobody else, and he would be very graphic, and I remember saying, nobody does this any better than Gordon Solie.
Both men staggered. Colt's face now has become a crimson mask.
He was ahead of his time. He made everything sound so good.
Great to play by Jack Briscoe.
And there's Harry Race diving off of that top rope, that controversial dive.
The wrestling fans of Gordon Solie's era trusted Gordon Solie.
Gordon Solie, well, he's just the best announcer.
Without Gordon, wouldn't be no championship wrestler.
In the 1970s, Solie became the lead announcer on Georgia Championship Wrestling. And by the end of the decade, Solie had become the revered voice in three separate NWA territories.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by 1-800-DIALDJs.com and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media capital of the world and home of Hulk Hogan, Tampa Bay, Florida. There is something about professional wrestling that you just can't look away from on television. The costumes, the oversized personalities, the inflated drama and comedy, it all plays even bigger on the tube. I remember watching Haystacks Calhoun and Friends on crummy UHF channels growing up in New Jersey many, many years ago. It was always like watching live television broadcasts from another dimension, sci-fi sports, if you will. And when I got to the University of Florida, my then-girlfriend wanted nothing more for a birthday gift than to drive from Gainesville to Tampa and see her favorite wrestler, Jerry Briscoe, taking on challengers live and in person at the Fort Homer Hesterly Arena. That was a crazy day. Pamela S. Allen knows a few things about what goes on behind the scenes of pro wrestling that you don't. She's the daughter of the late Gordon Solie, the whiskey-voiced ring announcer who put wrestling on the map way back in 1949 and stayed with it for nearly the next half century. Pam, her husband Robert Allen, and Scott Teal had written a fascinating new book about her dad, The Solie Chronicles, The Life and Times of Gordon Solie. It's a refreshing, honest look at a legend who was more than a little bit human. Pam and Robert, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
How are you guys?
We're warming up.
It's been great. It was about freezing this morning here.
Ah, well, that's okay. That's what we call a change of seasons. We don't have any of that here in Tampa Bay.
No, that's for sure.
As you both know. Pam, I want to start with you. I want to ask you, I'm thinking you must have had really mixed feelings going through your dad's papers and talking to his old friends about him for this book.
Yeah, there were high emotions and then having to just separate from that and just look at Dad as who he was, and learned a lot about him, learned a lot about myself. So, yeah, it was an up-and-down roller coaster. Some things I was like, ooh, but I think that's how he would have wanted it. I mean, he was always one that was up front on that kind of stuff, so I think we did him justice.
Do you think, and there's no way of knowing this, but do you think he would have wanted anyone, whether it was you or someone independent of the family, going through his papers and stuff? The reason I say that is I look at my own stuff and I think, you know, I got to clear this stuff out before it gets handed down to my daughter. There's some things that she just, you know, I mean, nothing litigious or, you know, that I'm going to be thrown in jail for, but, you know, nothing she really needs to read or trouble herself with.
Yeah, somebody brought that up when we published our first book, Gordon Sully, Something Left Behind, because those were a collection of Dad's stories and his writings. But he left all of his writings to me. Mm. I mean, that's the way it was. He left all of it to me, and with the purpose that he said, you'll know what to do with it. And I think that was, I took that as the go-ahead, because he was going to publish them himself anyway. So mm-hmm. I just took it and followed through on what he asked. And the biography is the same way. He had all these notes. Go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
Well, he had all these notes. I mean, he had, you know, on small pieces of paper, on legal pads, in journals. I mean, so it was all given to me and said, this is it. You know, he wasn't going to be able to follow through on his own wish to publish both the books. So I followed through. I did the daughter thing. And I think it was good for me because I learned about myself
mm-hmm.
through my dad. And I think that's important. I think that it clarified a lot of things, and I saw him not just as my dad, but as a person.
Well, and I wanted to ask you, what did you read and hear that surprised you most through this process?
Oh, a couple of things. Probably being arrested at 16, finding out about that, because he had hinted at it. You know, nobody should go to jail. Jail's a horrible place, you know. And I, well, what are you talking about? And he liked to drop little hints like that and kind of, you know, they're going to take it and go with it. And this was more towards the end of his life. And I started doing some investigating. My aunt didn't know anything about it. And the family was secretive on stuff like that back then.
Hmm.
So that was an interesting piece. And learning about his father, my grandfather, and
mm-hmm.
his just love of life and people. Because he did. He just got off on people.
I got the sense that he was the kind of guy that men and women like to be around adults, but he didn't seem to do so well with young children.
He was not comfortable around young children, admittedly so. I always had a good time around him when I was a kid, you know, but I was also, I would, you know, tag along behind him to the races or to some of the matches, and we were involved in other things like a church and the Strawberry Festival, and just, it goes on and on, but those were a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
and I think he never really felt comfortable. I was also like 4 and 5 years old at the time, so
right.
He's not carrying around a baby. I don't think he knew how to deal with babies too well, because even when he held our grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, he was like, wow, you know, what do I do with it? So, but he was
well,
a loving man.
Let me bring Robert in here. Robert, who did you meet first, Pam or Gordon?
I met Pam. Pam was we met at Illinois State University, and it was kind of amusing because she told me her dad was a television announcer in Florida. I thought, wow, that's really cool. And then she told me he announced professional wrestling. I'm like, oh, because in my area it wasn't a big deal. I was in the Chicago area. I didn't grow up watching it. And when I came to Florida, I found out that Gordon Sully was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She was absolutely correct. He was a friggin' household word in Florida at the time.
And they were all talking
about
networks.
Yeah. Tell me about your first impressions of Gordon.
Well, we knocked on his door. I heard a lot of barking. There were 5 poodles that answered the door, or miniatures. And here's this guy with cool glasses on, jewelry all over, wearing '71, the most contemporary leisure suit you could buy. It wasn't off the bargain barn rack, you know what I mean? It was a beautiful home. He seemed to be extremely confident in himself, and asked me some rather point direct questions, like he was the godfather, and I've, you know, because the first time we met, and I answered some and refused to answer the other one.
Really?
Yeah, I just told him, it's none of your business, you know. A couple of things, and we hit it off fine. Although,
hey, you know, I have to ask you now, what did he ask you that you wouldn't answer then, and will you answer it now?
No.
I could tell you the question now, but I won't answer now. I want to know if I slept
okay.
with his daughter before I married her. I said, that's none of your business. He was being rather arrogant at that moment, and he was taking me out, really.
That's a tough one. As a dad of a teenage daughter, I don't know that I would ask that, but, you know, it's going to be on your mind all the time.
It was more of a test than anything. He was checking me out to see I'd handle myself.
I see.
And I thought I did okay because, we hit it off very well, and we had a great time.
And
I only ticked him off once the first day I was there, I think. And,
only once the first day.
Yeah. That's when he started saying something about wrestling, and I gave him my standard thing about the business, you know. And I, like I said, keep in mind, I wasn't a fan of time, and I just said, oh, that's so fake. Oh, my God. You know?
You think it's so fake? You come down to the armory and you work out with these guys.
And I said, well, they look like they look like trees. I'm sure they'll kill me. And I had no understanding at the time of what these guys went through to put on a show for people. And then I think it was two or three days later, I got to watch Championship Wrestling from Florida for the first time, and I was hooked. I was a Gordon Solie fan, both as a person and as a wrestling fan.
I was going to ask you, so you were a Gordon Solie fan and you became a wrestling fan, or were you more a Gordon fan?
I became a wrestling fan because of Gordon. And now what I enjoy more than anything is the wrestling history end of it. That was one of the fun parts about doing the book, was talking to the guys that used to be there and learning more about what it was like in those days. Because like I said, I saw some of it on TV, but then I got their perspective on it too, and their perspective on Gordon.
Well, you know, one of the terrific things about this book, and just to tell people who are listening, is I've enjoyed a little wrestling over time watching it. I'm not a huge fan. It's not like must-see TV for me. But being in the Tampa Bay area where much of the action in the book takes place, it was fascinating to read and get a little more insight into a lot of people who I've known, everyone from Ellsworth Simmons, who's mentioned early in the book, to Ted Webb and Jack Harris later in the book, broadcasters here. I thought you guys did a great job of capturing some real colorful nuggets of local history on top of telling Gordon's story.
And see, Dad would have done it that way because he was like major into history. He loved trivia. So, I mean, it was important. And he says everything has a story behind it. Look for it.
I think most of the people know Gordon because of wrestling, because he became nationally known and then worldwide known on satellite. But they didn't know that he was so involved in stock car racing. And the one phenomenal thing still about Gordon was to go to the racetrack and listen to the man announce a stock car race. I mean, he was incredible.
Hmm.
And Tommy Kuhn.
Go ahead. No, please. Go ahead, Robert.
I said it a couple times before, but Tommy Kuhn, who was the sports editor there in those days for the Tampa Tribune and a close friend of Gordon's, he said Gordon was better at calling a stock car race than he was at calling a wrestling match.
Yep.
People find that hard to believe, but I agree with the man.
Tom McEwen's another one who I actually worked with briefly at the Tribune and has been a friend over the years. He's a good guy. It was fun to see him referenced often in the book.
He's the one that said, if you're going to write this, you tell the good with the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that as, okay, you know, no fluff.
Well, I think the term is warts and all.
Yes, yes.
How did your dad change over the years from when you were a kid to through the 60s and 70s, 80s? I mean, wrestling is becoming bigger and bigger over those years. The distribution of championship wrestling from Florida, from Georgia, and the NAA and so on. It got bigger and bigger and bigger. How did he change through that period of time?
See, and people have asked me that before. I don't think – I didn't see him as changing, but I also was not around him for his big career leap when it did go. My parents were divorced when I was 9 or 10, and I was moved out of the state. So my reference to Dad was – if I could catch it every once in a while on a TV station in Illinois that was running through Skip, you know, across the country. And that was my limit. But he didn't change. He was always who he was. He was my dad, you know.
Right.
I think his behavior remained consistent. The business changed.
Yes, it did. Technology changed all of that.
More so, probably the biggest impact was the corporate age of wrestling.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't care for that as much as the old age of wrestling.
Well, the old age of wrestling, as you put it, was a very, you know, it was a handshake deal kind of place, and which of course got him in trouble in one of those stock car business deals, as I recall. But it was very one to one. It was a very small, insulated world. And then when you have the Vince McMahon and that kind of thing going on, it becomes much bigger than any one person, even McMahon for that matter. And I guess it was just a generational thing. Was it that, or was there a lack of disrespect, Pam, to your dad when all that was happening, or was it just generational that times were changing?
Some generational, yeah. It's, you know, he's the old guy. He needs to get out of the way. You know, we've got new ideas, and they're better than your ideas, and, yeah, we'll listen to your ideas. But as soon as they turned their backs, they went and did what they wanted. He didn't like having to follow a script. Everything had changed, you know. And you're right. It was more one-on-one and a handshake back in the during old school wrestling, you know, what they did. The golden age of wrestling, as they call it. But that upset him because before you had Cowboy and you had Eddie and you had Dad. And the three of them together were a powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And when Cowboy died, then it just left Dad and Eddie. And it just became more of the younger group was moving in. So it was a lot of generational, I guess. I'll retract my statement.
Well, I've got another little clip of Gordon. I found this on YouTube. You can see the video. Search Gordon Solie. The number of things will come up. But this is kind of fun. I don't know who this wrestler is, and maybe if you guys know who it is, feel free to identify him. But I thought this was interesting because this is titled, I think it's titled Gordon Solie Says No. And he's being threatened by a wrestler on camera. So give a listen to this, folks.
And I've told you this before, Mr. Solie. If I ever find out that this information came from you, this is not a threat. But accidents can happen to anybody. And that goes for you, Mr. Cole. And I'm going to tell you before you say another word. I'd like to show you an accident that happened to Blackjack Mulligan. Let's see that film.
Nope.
What do you mean, no?
We will not be seeing that. The NWA has ruled that is not to be shown again on television, so it will not be shown again on television, sir.
Well, let me tell you something. It's got real clear to me. The lines are drawn. The final battle is in conflict now. You know, Mulligan took something from some book he believes in, and he can believe in that. Mulligan, I'm going to conjure up everything now because the final line has been drawn. And Mr. Solie and Mr. Colt, you took the step on the other side.
Well, I want to ask you one question. Speaking of accidents, I don't suppose you'd care to discuss this patch on your eye. No? I don't suppose he would care to discuss that.
While he was a little ticked at, I don't recognize the wrestler's voice, Blackjack Mulligan, and that he's talking about. Buddy Colt was on the set with Dad for that one.
Right.
And
yeah, I don't know who that was.
I don't remember. I've seen it, heard it, and I don't remember, honestly. But
Has anyone talked to you guys about making a movie out of this book? I just kept thinking, I kept hearing Gordon's voice while I read the book and reading the stories, and I just thought, this would make such a tremendous movie.
It's been coming up in conversation more and more lately, so it's something that we're looking into.
Backers, we need backers.
Actually, we'll have to get it. We're have to get it into the proper form to be submitted to the right places, and that just takes time. And right now, we're spending all of our time promoting the Solie Chronicles as a book. But later on, yes, that would be wonderful.
Pam, your husband mentioned that he became a wrestling fan after meeting your dad. Did you, you weren't around him in your you know, primary years. You were up in Illinois. As you said, your folks were divorced. Did you get into the wrestling? Did your dad ever take you to wrestling matches?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, when the guys would be working out, he'd have to run down there for whatever reason. You know, I mean, I would tag along. Don Curtis, I mean, I've said this before, but he's like my knight in shining armor. I mean, and he was like the rescuer. I remember running down the ditch in my grandmother's front yard and twisted my ankle and tried to get up and twisted the other ankle. And Don was the one that came down and got me out of the ditch and picked me up and carried me in the house and, you know, you're going to be okay. And he's put me on his shoulders. And Eddie, I remember vividly, and Mike and I aren't too far apart in age. And I remember skipping rocks with Mike. I mean, yeah, the guys were around, but they were, and as gruff as they would appear on television, when I would come in, just being a little girl, this was just my observation, they were so quiet and so gentle. Hi, how are you? You know, and I was like, well, so that's how I saw them. They were just the guys, you know. They were just
interesting
regular guys, big guys. They were very big guys.
And was your dad ever intimidated by the size of these guys or their behavior? Did he always seem to feel very comfortable around them? Because watching the show, I always felt nervous for him.
No, I don't think he was intimidated by them. Not at all. It was a brotherhood.
There were guys that actually got ticked to Gordon at intervals. It would be few and far between. But I think if anybody ever got into it with Gordon, there'd be 30 wrestlers there so fast, you know, you couldn't even blink.
He put them over. They would protect him. I mean, it was his job to put them over. So, I mean, that'd be like canceling out your meal ticket.
And he understood that certain guys were going to come on there and maintain their persona no matter who they were talking to. Gordon was a professional. He knew that. But like I said, yeah, there were some bumps in the road, but normally, no, he had a great time with the guys. Even though he was the broadcaster, they considered him one of the guys. He went out and partied with them. He had a good time with them. He worked with them before the shows. He worked with them during the shows. He carried a lot of them in interviews, and he sold them to the fans when he was describing their matches in the ring. So overall, they loved him. He didn't have to worry about most of them threatening him.
And, you know, you kind of a little bit dance around in the book about whether wrestling is real or fake, and I don't really want to start a big debate on that right now, but I'm kind of curious. Most people, I think, tend to think, well, and I think there's been acknowledgments in more recent years that a lot of it's staged and scripted, but your dad, in his defense of it over the years, was always, you know, as you said, Robert, well, you don't believe it? Come down here and see these guys work out. And I was wondering, maybe that's why he felt comfortable around these guys, because most of it was scripted, and he knew he wasn't going to get hurt. He knew they're selling tickets.
He gave the business credibility. He defended it at every point in time because he admired these guys. He thought they were the greatest conditioned athletes in the world.
They were going an hour and a half, or 2 hours in the ring, whereas today it's like, you know, you may get 15, 20 minutes, and there's more talking than there is wrestling. And Vince changed it when he moved him from sports to sports entertainment. Entertainment now. So.
Yeah, Gordon was there when it was changing from being under the guise of most states' athletic commissions to strictly entertainment.
Mm. And these guys steroids. These guys weren't doing steroids. They were working out.
That's kind of frightening in and of itself that they were not doing steroids. You know?
Yeah.
They were just large people that could move very well.
Very agile.
Yeah.
I mean, you had some champions in there, too. I mean, you had, you know, the Briscoes. You had Luces. I mean, you had some people that had some real talent that had wrestled before. I mean, it's like this is what they knew best. This is what they did best. They did well in this.
I think part of the fact that Gordon himself was not a great athlete, and this is mentioned in the book, and he admired people that were. So one of the things that was easy for him to sell these guys is because they were tremendous athletes. Or like Ric Flair, he was the greatest showman there was as far as Gordon was concerned, and he sold them that way.
And he still is a great showman.
Dusty had charisma, and it was amazing. If you stood there, Dusty'd stand up there, "These are my people." And they'd stand up and cheer for him because they were his people. They loved him. And Gordon took that and ran with it, you know. So whether they're great showmen or they had superior strength or they were quick or whatever.
And it was a good outlet for people, too. You know, whatever was going on at home or in their work life or whatever, wrestling was a release, you know. I mean, to watch it and to be a part of it.
It was a healthy catharsis. People worked hard all week, and as far as Gordon was concerned, it came to the matches, and they vented, and boy, can they vent.
Yeah, I've seen that. This half hour went fast. I wonder if you guys have any final thoughts on, you know, how you want Gordon to be remembered and how he'd want to be remembered.
I think he was one of the greatest teachers and the greatest broadcaster in the history of professional wrestling.
I agree with that. I've been looking outside that he's not just being my dad, but he was probably one of the best teachers I ever had. Great lessons learned from him, and sometimes in so few words.
Very sharing man.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can order the Soley Chronicles, The Life and Times of Gordon Soley, exclusively from Crowbar Press at its website, www.crowbarpress.com. That's exactly the way it sounds, CrowbarPress.com. And if fans are interested, can they find you guys on Facebook or Twitter or any of those places?
They can go to the Gordon Soley Facebook fan page.
It is at 1,864 right now. So it is growing. It's wonderful. All the comments by the fans have been just, you know, this is like family. I mean, that's one thing Dad said about the wrestling business. You know, it's family.
Excellent. Well, Pam and Robert, it was fascinating reading the book. It's always interesting when you can hear that person's voice in your head the whole time, and Gordon's voice is totally memorable. No one who ever hears that voice will ever forget it. And I just want to thank you guys for coming on the show today and being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Had a good time.
My pleasure. All right.
Bye-bye.
Good luck to you both.
Thank you.
Bye bye. And folks, for more sports-related interviews, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with athletes such as Rick Fox from the Lakers, Bill Romanowski, Brandi Chastain, Kerry Strug, Amy Alcott, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, blogcritics.org, TrueSlant, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Vox, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, Current, or Odeo. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thank you so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Hey, how about that? And welcome once again to Championship Wrestling from Georgia. I'm Gordon Soley, your host. And what a tremendous crowd we have here at the fantastic WTBS Sports Arena. We've got a lot of great matches upcoming.